Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's the Power of Poetics, the DC Poetry Project's open mic call-in show.
Project. Tonight we will build bridges through a celebration of world poetry. I'd like to welcome everyone again to the Power of Poetics. Tonight serving with me as co-host will be noted and renowned award-winning poet Catfish Medaris, who hails from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Catfish, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready, Michael. I'm ready and, for everybody to ring in the poetry, all that good stuff.
Fantastic. Tonight, our very special guest will be Dr. Changming Wan and his son, Alan Ching Wan, who both hail from Vancouver, British Columbia. Dr. Wan is the world's most widely published poetry author. His poetic works have been published in over 1,000 publications. He's an 8-time Pushcart nominee, and he's authored 4 chapbooks among countless other things that he's done. His son, Alan, is also a well-known poet in his own right. He has been nominated for 2 Pushcart Prizes, and he's author of the book Traffic Light. So again, Dr. Wan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, yes.
All right, and Alan, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic to you. We'd like to welcome you to the Power of Poetics. What I'd like to do is to open the lines to some of our other callers, and once I do that, Wan, you're on in terms of sharing your poetry, and we're so pleased that you're here. Thank you. Hold on 1 second. Caller, you're on the air. Area code 301. Hello, caller?
Huh?
Area code 301. The first letter
Hello?
Is 4. Yes. Your name is?
Hello, yeah. My name is Tony Musembi. I am a student of Professor Slyke at Montgomery College.
All right, fantastic.
And I was just calling in. It's a pleasure to be on the show, and I was just calling in to read a Swahili version of a villanette I wrote over the Easter holiday. And I was going to read, like, the 2 versions, the English version and the Swahili version and the English version.
Oh, fantastic. Great. Thank you for calling in. So hold on a moment while we have an opportunity to bring some other people online. And then after Dr. Wan and his son, Alan, we'll call you up to share your poetry. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank
Tony.
You. Yvonne, you're on
yes.
air. Fantastic.
Hi.
We're glad that you're here to share the power of poetry from a world perspective. And Dr. Wan, you're on. You'd like to share your poetry.
Okay, thank you, Michael. It's a great honor to be here on air with the audience. And although I'm quite nervous, and I'm happy to read a few of my poems to your friendly listeners. So the first one is titled Immigration. I will read it in Chinese first, and then I will translate it into English. By the way, actually, I'm a bilingual poetry writer because I publish poetry in both Chinese and English as well. So shall I go on?
Yes.
Okay. So immigration. 移民. 未从你母语的豪强逻辑逃出升天，你徘徊，再徘徊，穿越地球的长度和宽度，将你的旧我交付于另一种语法，另一整套对你的嘴唇和鼻尖都很陌生的语法规则，从而扩展你心灵的地图，远远超出家庭和避风港。然而在此期间，它却成为这个所选语言一拳令人费解之悖论的殖民地。例如，快流沙可能会很慢，拳击圈实是方形，而几内亚豚既不是猪，也不是来自几内亚，一如你和我。Now I'm going to put into English. Immigration. To escape from the tyrannical logic of your mother tongue, you wandered, wandering through Earth's length and breadth, subjecting your old self to another syntax, a whole set of grammatical rules, strangely new to your lips and tips, to expand the map of your mind, far beyond your home and haven. Yet in the meantime, it becomes colonized,by all the puzzling paradoxes of this chosen language. For example, quicksand can be very slow. Boxing rings are in fact square. And a guinea pig is neither a pig nor is it from Guinea, like you or me. And the second one, because the mother stays on the corner, so I'd like to read a poem up to my mother.
But can I ask a question first? Would you give us an opportunity to kind of talk about that piece first before you read the second one? I mean, it's very, very powerful. So I'd like you to share with us your reason for writing it, and then we'll go from there. Talk about the piece. What was your inspiration?
Oh, this poem is one of my favorites. It seems to be one of the most popular ones among all the public poems I've already published. It's inspired by a poem by a Chinese author. The title is Syntax. So I found it very inspiring, so I wrote the poem. Because to me, everybody, including myself, of course, is an immigrant in one way or another, either in the physical world or in the spiritual world. We're constantly migrating from one realm to another. But often we find that when we find ourselves in a new realm, we find many things that are confusing, full of paradoxes, like the ones I mentioned in my poem. Yeah.
Now, are there questions are there questions from some of our callers in terms of what you heard, in terms of that particular piece?
I have a comment. I read that poem. Chang Ming sent it to me, and I really liked it. And hearing him read it in Chinese, it's like a river of words. I can't understand him, but I can read it in English, and it's like a joke. I mean, not a joke, but it's a humorous piece. It's like a happy poem, where you say a boxing ring, it's not a ring, it's a square. A guinea pig, it's not a pig, and it's not from Guinea. It's like something. That translates beyond language. It's just something that's, you know, funny, that we find funny. This is a joke that it travels through all languages. When you go buy a hot dog, I've heard Chinese, I've heard Korean, Mexican, German, they got this joke. Oh no, why did they give me the worst part of the dog? You know. It's just like a humorous thing.
All right. Are there other comments? Well, what I'd like to know in terms of reciting and writing in Mandarin, tell us about that process. Tell us about Mandarin itself. What makes it so unique as a language?
Well, actually, I didn't begin to speak Mandarin until I was 19 years old. So even today, even my family members often make fun of my village accent, because I was born and I grew up in a Chinese village, very poor and remote. So when I first attended university in Shanghai, everybody make fun of me. So that's why I always feel nervous whenever I speak, either in Mandarin or in English. And to tell you a little bit joke, I couldn't make difference between L and N sound when I began to learn English. It took me nearly 3 months for me to distinguish between I do not know or I do not, or it's very low. I cannot tell the difference. So that's why Mandarin itself is a foreign language for me, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it is very interesting. So, Juan, please continue with your poetry. It's beautiful.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the second one is written for my mother. 献给刘瑜，不是等您走了之后，再为了纪念您而写诗。我现在所写的，亲爱的妈妈，是我对您地球上生命里最强者之一的崇高敬意。是的，在您许许多多的死亡经历中，对我个人和我的儿子们最最重要的，莫过于您两岁时的病痛，如此严重，以致您贫穷而无知的养母。 只好无奈地把您摊放在一个簸箕里，把您活生生的尸体送回给您的生母。要不是您的继父用他那杀满技能遏制住邪恶的精神，便把他逼到一个位置的角落里，你会像一个树苗那样注定凋落。这就是为什么您的乳名后来改为简儿。因此，好好的妈妈，请为我们保持顽强的生命。Now English. On Mother's Day for Liu Yu, rather than composing poetry to commemorate you after you are gone, I'm now writing, dear mom, to pay my highest tribute to you as one of the hardest fated on earth. Yes, among the many death experiences you've had, the most significant one for me and my sons, of course, was your sickness you suffered at two, which was so severe that your poor and ignorant foster mother could do nothing but put you on a flat basket and return your living corpse to your bio-creator. But for your stepfather, who used his shamanic skills to contain the evil spirit and drive it to an unknown corner, you would have died like a doomed sapling. That's why your name is changed to Li Fang. So stay well, Mom, and remain hardy for us.
I like that one a lot.
Wow. Catfish, what did you like about it?
I like the, it was, I don't know, there's two things that stood out to me, and I'm kind of strange, but the Chinese sounded almost like American Indian language, like a little bit like Cherokee and a little bit like Pueblo Indian. And the way the connotations and stuff, but I was thinking about Allen Ginsberg's Kaddish, you know, the famous poem he wrote, you know, that was dedicated to his mother, and I think all of poets as you get older, you know, write something for their parents, you know, to keep close to their heart, and that's what I felt that Chang Ming was doing there, and I thought it was very honorable that he shared that with us.
Oh, very much so. One of the pieces that I travel and share is called Shelling Beans, and it's about a young man recognizing what's really important in the world. And this is a poem about him and his mother recognizing that the fruit of the earth is more important than riches from the earth, just the fruit. And maybe I'll have an opportunity to share that tonight. But again, that was a very powerful piece in terms of your the power of your mother and what you believed and what you think about your mother. So that was very, 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 very nice. Any other comments from some of our listeners, other listeners?
Yes, I just want to say that I found it very touching and very powerful that he paid tribute to his mom while she's still alive. Some of us just take our moms for granted. And I also like the way he put it in Chinese and in English, and that just gave it so much power, especially when he explained the meaning, the origins of her name. I really love the poetry.
Is this
Chinese?
Tony speaking?
Yes,
it's Tony. Yes, Tony.
Okay.
Yes.
And you're from Africa, right, Tony?
Yes, I'm from Kenya.
Oh, you're from Kenya. Okay.
Yes,
from Kenya. That's great. You're right. It was a very powerful piece. Jan, would you like to continue?
Yeah, okay. The last one is about all artists in the world. I wrote it to all artists, poets, and authors, and it was selected for inclusion in the best new poem online. So this is one of my own favorite. So the title is Single Last Sale, 最后一卖。你早已卖光所有的汗珠和血浆，现在尽管无人问津，你也要卖掉自己的心脏。有的人嫌你的血不够红，有的不满意你偏窄的心房，还有的认为你的冠状脉沾满过多的情伤。你沿街叫卖，四处流浪，一颗心还是那么鲜活，在手中不同的跳动，就像青蛙一样。你渴望能换来一杯清水，润润你那冒烟的嗓音，这样你便不必出卖你的灵魂，就像市场上其他的小贩那样，贪得无厌，又铁石心肠。So English, single last sale. You've long since sold out both your sweat and blood. Now you try to sell your heart, though nobody wants it. Some say the blood is not red enough.Others find the chamber is too narrow. Still others think the coronary arteries stained with too many fillings. You paddle along, chanting aloud from street to street, with your heart still fresh, beating like a frog in your hands. You hope to sell it for a glass of water, just to cool down your burning voice, so you do not have to sell your soul like all other hawkers in the market. Well satiated,But hardly heartfelt. That's it.
That was
would you mind? Right. Would you read that one again, please? Please read that one again, because there are a couple of lines in there that I heard that I wanted to comment on. Please read it again, if you don't mind.
Okay. You long since sold out both your sweat and blood. Now you try to sell your heart, though nobody wants it. Some say the blood is not red enough.Others find the chambers too narrow. Still others think the coronary arteries stained with too many fillings. You paddle around, chanting aloud, from street to street, with your heart still fresh, beating like a frog in your hands. You hope to sell it for a glass of water, just to cool down your burning voice, so you do not have to sell your soul like all other hawkers in the market.Well satiated, but hardly heartfelt.、Yeah.
What does that particular poem mean to you?
I think most artists, almost every artist, is working very hard, try to express himself, try to reveal what is beauty, what is inspiring to him or her. But、mm-hmm. although he put all his effort, even sometimes his lifetime's effort, into a single artwork, but still,There's no reader for it. There's no viewer. There's nobody who actually appreciates, who actually understands the value of it. I think that's what most poets, writers, authors, or artists are doing. So I just want to devote this poem to all those hardworking artists who devote all their lifetime, their efforts, even their heart, all their life and their spirit to their work. But in very few cases are the artworks are truly appreciated by the understanding people.That's what I'm trying to do with this poem. I think it's some kind of tragic feeling that many artists feel, I think.
Very powerful piece. Are there comments from other people? Catfish, any comments?
Yeah.
Alex,
I love this、
comments?
One. This one, your heart is like a frog in your hand. If you ever held a frog in your hand, you know, and it wants to jump out, your blood's not red enough.Like you're not, it's just not red enough, and you end up like a hooker in the market. Those lines right there, man, that made the poem.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know that. That's what stood out to me.
Yeah, that was deep, man.
All
I'll put、
right.
you in for a postcard for that one, man. Number nine.
Beautiful. Well, what we're going to do is take a very short break, and we'll be right back with the Power of Poetics and our special guests.Shaming Wan and Alan Ching Wan. Hold on 1 second, and we'll be right back. A very short break. As you see, our breaks are really short. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and you're here with us on the Power of Poetics. The call-in number is 646-716-8754. Please call in and share your poetry, and if you don't feel comfortable sharing your poetry, call in and listen. So we're here building bridges and building culture. So tonight, this is a great evening. Juan, would you like to share another piece?
Well, that's all I have prepared for today for the first one.
All right, then. Let's open the floor to some other of our guests, and then we'll bring Alan on, if that's okay. Is that okay, Alan?
Yep, sounds good.
Okay, fantastic. All right. Tony, I know that you wanted to share.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Sounds good,
Tony.
Yes. So, I'll start with the Swahili version of my villainette. The poem in English is entitled Still Standing. And in Swahili, it's entitled Bado Twasimama Imara. Kilio cha risasi za kikalashnikovi kuchavunja amani alfajiri kinatoa nyimbo za pasaka za waokovu kundi la majambazi wane ambao wana macho yanayowaka. Jitayarisheni kufa, twaja kupaka hiki kijiji rangi nyekundu, twaja kumwaga damu. Waislamu ondokeni, kafiri bakini. Kilio cha risasi za kikalashnikovi chavunja amani alfajiri. Tutawawinda kuanzia mpambazuko mpaka alfajiri. Kiongozi wa nchi awaambia wafuazi wake. Kundi la majambazi wane ambao wana macho yanayowaka. Siamini ya kwamba vijana na moja 48 wameuawa. Unyende na vilio vinavyopasua moyo zaidi zazidi kujaza kumbi za mochari tena na tena. Kilio cha risasi za kikalashnikovi chavunja amani alfajiri. Kiongozi mwasi wa wanne, mbona matumaini yako ya kijuu ya kafa? Kwani masomo shupavu ya chuo cha sheria na makano ya maisha yalikupa wazimu? Kundi la majambazi wane ambao wana macho yanayowaka. Amani itawale na mgogoro uishe. Twaomba Mola awape roho za wanafunzi 148 wa Garissa University amani milele na milele. Amina. Kilio cha risasi za kikalashnikovi na chavunja amani alfajiri. Kundi la majambazi wane ambao wana macho yanayowaka. And now I'll read the English version, which is entitled Still Standing. Kalashnikov burst, shattered the peace of dawn, cut short the pious Easter praise songs of the born again. Blazed-eyed gang of four. Prepare to die, for we come to paint this town red. Muslims, step out. Infidels, stay in. Kalashnikov bursts, shatter the peace of dawn. We'll hunt them down from dusk till dawn, the head of state tells his men. Blazed-eyed gang of four. I can't believe 148 youth are dead. Heart-rending wails and screams fill mortuary halls again and again. Kalashnikov bursts shatter the peace of dawn. Radicalized leader of all, what made your high hopes fade? Did the rigors of law school and contradictions of life drive you insane? Lay-eyed gang of all. Let peaceful conflict resolution reign supreme instead. God rest the souls of the 148 Garissa University students in eternal peace. Amen. Kalashnikov bursts, shatter the peace of dawn. Blazed-eyed gang of four. Thank you.
Really good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow, very nice. Yep. How long did it take you to write that piece, Tony?
like a week and another week of revisions.
So do you go to school with Dr. Mary Ann there in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, I'm a student of hers.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. This is my first time I've opened mic, and I've gathered a lot of confidence, and I've really sharpened my poetic skills.
And I'm, hey, thank you.
A poet, and it's wonderful. Yeah.
Why is poetry important to you?
Because I find it's a nice medium to share my my beliefs, my feelings, my experience, and also to learn from others. It's to learn from others different styles of expression, to hear things expressed, like ideas expressed in different languages, written in different ways, and just for the engagement part of it, just being there, being able to just be, feel free and write and express yourself and share with another person as they do this likewise.
Very nice.
It's like a brotherhood.
Yes,
it is.
So it is.
Brotherhood and a sisterhood.
Yes.
Yes. We have another person online, and what I'd like to do is to allow him to come on. And then, Alan, are you ready? Okay, all right. What I wanted to do, as I said, bridging cultures, building bridges, is just to kind of go around to have different voices from different people in different parts of the world. I think that's what makes us all so beautiful, and that it is one world, one poetic world. So hold on 1 second. I will bring this gentleman on. Good evening, area code 256.
Hey, how you doing? Wing Dog.
Wing Dog, welcome. Welcome to the show. Welcome. We're having a great time tonight. This really makes me happy. Catfish, this is your friend Wing Dog.
Hey, Wing, man, I was listening to your show.
Hey, Catfish, how you doing?
Good. Are you still in pain?
Huh?
Are you still in pain?
I'm your piece of poetry.
No, I said, hey, Wing Dog, are you still feeling that pain?
No, no, I got over my pain.
Oh, okay, right. That's good.
So welcome to the show. Wing Dog also was one of our featured guests several months ago, so again, he's a fantastic poet. Alan, it is your turn, my friend.
Okay.
Please honor us with some of your work.
Okay, I'd like to start off with a poem named China Charm. I dedicated to my brother named George. It's about a necklace he got me during his travels in China. Blood red intertwined thread of life, passing through a shadowed low point, the lid lukewarm, dulled, and dusty. Inside the glass of time, a 5-year-old grain of rice remains odorless and recognizable. With it, a petite, pretty green-blue flower flourishing without air, its potential limited by its surroundings. Inscripted onto the smooth yellow-tinged surface of the rice are Yuan Qing, my Chinese name. Looking like two Taoist drawings, it is a single small grain, but I never forget the wide summer fields. Swaying back and forth without a creak or swish, it hangs high on the high lamp head. Much like the dreams of China in my head, a charming charm indeed. Restrained but living, living but not thriving.
Very good. Get some more?
Yeah, my next piece is called Chasing the Pacific Star.
Before you begin, let me ask this question, and I should have asked this of your father too. When did you first start writing, and were there any incidents in your life that made you want to write?
I think I started writing maybe around 5 or 6 years ago. My dad encouraged me to start writing poetry, and at the time I had some poetry-related projects going on at school, so I found that I spent most of my time writing poetry for school and for stuff outside of school, for myself and personal enjoyment.
Let me ask Juan, what about you, sir? When did you first start writing, and what were the incidents that led you to write?
Well, it's an ancient story. It's during the first and only family trip to Banff, the most famous Canadian national park. On the trip, one evening, I invited my two sons and my wife to climb mountain with me, but all of them refused, so I went climbing by myself. On the mountain, I was thinking about all my life, and suddenly I burst into tears because I think that I found myself just living like a money-making machine. I think that's the meaning of my life, working so hard from the east, from the Chinese countryside, to a Canadian, the best city in the world, Vancouver. So I just want to work to make money all the time. So I found that my life is meaningless. So I suddenly felt like I want to write something. I couldn't find any pen or paper. So I ran over on the mountaintop. I tried to find a piece of waste paper, and then I tried to find a broken pencil, and I wrote my first poem. And after long, I wrote dozens of poems that began to make submission. And I didn't know the vanity press or any other thing. So the first time I made submission, I made to the vanity press, and then I found it was wrong. So that's why I changed. And then it was not until more than half a year later I had my first poem published in Canada. So in mid 2005, I began to publish poetry. That's the story. It's very very inspiring one, I think. I still remember that day. I still keep that the broken piece of waste paper in my safe box.
All right. Well, I plan to ask that question of everyone, so get ready, everybody. But I want to go back to Alan for him to continue sharing his work. Alan, you're on again.
Okay. This poem's called Chasing the Pacific Star. Air gyres crowd into the boy as he dashes through the clouds of hope. Surfing on a wish, he descends to the touchy ocean. A salty breeze gushes from underneath. A spring of refreshing motivation. The flaring sun eagerly follows him like a bright shadow. Intimidating mountains forcibly rise but are capped from the serene misty horizon where a bleach bird loudly flaps its wings away. Upgrading his life board with exhilarating dreams as he dashes through the clouds of hope, chasing the Pacific Star.
That's a good one.
Well, any questions from others who are here online with us? Any questions for Alan? Well, I have a question. All right.
Yeah.
How does a poem begin for you? Does it begin with an idea, a form, or an image?
Usually, a poem begins for me with an idea or like a phrase or a word. Like, for example, the last poem I just read, Chasing the Pacific Star, I recalled something about the Chasing the Pacific Star. I read it somewhere, and then that helped me blossom into writing this entire poem.
When did you and your dad start the Poetry Pacific e-zine online? How old is that particular?
I think that was about 2012.
Yeah, November Day.
Talk to us a little bit about the e-zine, the blog.
Well, we got a lot of submissions, and actually, this is something very important I want to do is to call for submissions because our magazine is a very good one. It's a two-generation project, so at least it will last longer than most short-lived magazines. So it is published quarterly, but now it's changing to biannually. And we publish about 70 poems each time. So I would like to call make a wide call for all people who are interested in poems, either to visit our site at the Poetry Pacific blogspot.ca, or just make submissions to us. The email address is editors.pp@gmail.com. So we'd like to invite you, all of you who are listening to us, or anyone interested in poetry, to make submissions to us. We will actively consider them all the time. It's on a rolling basis. Yeah.
You know, one of the reasons that I asked that particular question is that Alan made the statement in his piece about Pacific, and I was wondering whether that held some type of meaning for you, the word Pacific.
all perceived because I think this is a large the body of water in the world. So it's a kind of metaphor for us. There are two things why we use the Pacific. One word is that actually I gave the name to this magazine because I like whales. Because whales, there's one thing particular about animal, that is, its voice can be heard even 3,000 kilometers away. That's a fact that I think many people do not know. But every poet or author, I would say, would like to be a whale because we want our voice to be heard even beyond a continent. So that's why I chose the word Pacific. And another thing is that Pacific is the lake between Canada, North America, and China. So I like to use this word Pacific. That's why we call it Pacific Poetry. Yeah.
It's a good name.
And Alan, why did you choose Pacific in your poem, the word?
I happened to just choose it because it was like a familiar sense of word, like mm-hmm. home to me, because that's mm. close to where we're located. But it's also very big and encompasses more than just what we are.
Wow, it's a very powerful statement. Would you like to share some more of your poetry?
Sure, I have one last piece. It's called a Komodo Dragon. Staring menacingly at all observers, you being the greatest observer of all. Claws scraping the loose earth, scaly tail weaving through the sky. Rockery exterior, grinding rock, squinty eyes seeing all. And you wonder, what more is beyond this claw? That's it.
All right, would you read that one again? Read that one again. Komodo Dragon, please read it again.
All right. Staring menacingly at all observers, you being the greatest observer of all. Claws scraping the loose earth, scaly tail weaving through the sky. Rocky exterior, grinding rock, squinty eyes seeing all. And you wonder, what more is beyond this glass?
I like that one. Very good.
When you write, Alan, where do you write? Do you write at home? Do you write while you're in school, in your class? Where do you write?
Usually I just write at home. But sometimes I get ideas from being outside.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yvonne, you've been waiting a while. Are you still there?
Oh, yeah. I actually not only wanted to plug an event, I actually had a couple pieces to share. I was really getting inspired by this. This is really happening.
Well, great. And that's what I want you to do, is to share some of your poetry.
Now, the pieces I have, I come from a lot of different backgrounds on this. There's music inspiration. Some is abstract. Some is kind of mirth. But I think this one here is a piece that might work with everybody. This one's called Birth of Word. Something so pure that once the words describe it, the realness of it has morphed into another quality. While the words have then lost their meaning, because a word can only reach to convey, to codify, what started as a feeling, an inexplicable elation, inspired an urge to express the inexpressible, while leaving an artifact behind for all to relish, to imagine what the experience, the vision, the vibe were about. When those who search will find themselves more so than what the artifact signifies, in essence, a totem to consecrate the passing of a great time, an instant, a reflection from their own mind.
That was a good one.
Wow. Tell us more about
that
piece. What was your inspiration?
That was, you know what's odd is I actually either write emails to people and they're writing something serious and I end up going off into something tangential on my own that has nothing to do with what they're writing me about. Or I'll just be sitting there and a thought comes to mind, like a voice. And that one in particular, someone wrote me something and what they wrote really wasn't working for me, so I just wrote this as a response unconsciously, and it became a poem.
I think what I'd like us to do to hold that thought is to give other people an opportunity. We kind of go around, in like a round table. Now, I don't know whether Juan and you and Alan need to leave because you're both calling from Vancouver, British Columbia. So do you need to leave, or are you going to be here with us?
Yeah, actually, somebody is waiting for me outside. I don't know why he...
Okay. All right. All right then.
Well, I want to thank you both for being a part of this experience, Bridging Cultures. This is fantastic. This has always been a dream of mine to bring people together and to allow them to share in their own voice and their own native culture, that it's not about us understanding, it's about the person understanding what he or she is sharing. So I want to thank you both for being with us tonight.
Hey.
Thank you very much.
Hey, I want to thank Ewan and Alan. And Ewan, I'll see you in New Coin from South Africa.
Sure. Yeah, in New Coin, yes. We'll see you a lot.
We'll be in there together next time.
Yeah, we will appear side by side. Okay.
Side by side. That's how life should be.
Okay.
Take care.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. All right. So, Catfish.
Yeah.
Would you like to share a piece?
Sure, man. I can read one. Let's see here. I'm going to read a little bit. This one's called, this is a tribute to Arthur Rimbaud, and it was published in New South Wales, Australia last year, and it's called Metamorphosis. And the reason I'm reading this one is kind of a reverse of Dr. Ewan's. It's like a reverse migration. Anyway, it's called Metamorphosis, dedicated to Jean-Nicole Arthur Rimbaud after reading his poem, Genie. The man approached 80 winters with no trepidation. Shadows crept closer, challenging the sun. Death was a spider waiting in its web. He pointed the ancient whaling boat west. The oars fit his hands like a woman. As land disappeared, icebergs with seals catching fish and polar bears catching seals floated by. He paid no attention, concentrating on the foggy horizon. The farther the watery path took him, the stronger he felt. Gnawing on dry blubber, he tossed chunks to passing seagulls. The sun and wind bathed his face. His cloudy vision became clear and strong. He felt young. Muscles in his arms and legs and back bulged with an energy almost forgotten. Where land had once bridged a massive migration, only the sea existed. 50 miles across the Bering Sea, passed in the blink of an eye. Years dropped from the man like layers of skin on a snake or onion. As he reached the tundra-laden shore, his language had been left behind with his old body. A young new man leaped from the boat. A red wine strength throbbed throughout him. His journey beckoned him south and west. For many miles he saw nothing, and then he noticed the tracks of wolves. He was no longer alone, and yet he felt no fear. Cracking ice from a pond, he drank deeply. That night, sleeping under a billion diamonds, he knew it would be his last as a man. The wolves, content on an easy breakfast, bounded down onto the man. His transformation into a reindeer took less than a second. Striking out with sharp hoofs, it sent several tumbling wolves howling in pain. The reindeer floated up from the ground and flew faster than lightning. It looked down at villages, forests, and rivers blurring by. Snow-topped mountains grew up from the earth toward heaven. A cold rain cried into the orange, azure, turquoise-painted streams. A monolithic temple loomed above everything. Monks in saffron-colored robes followed each other in solemn silence. Workers drove herds of yaks and goats, and some carried woven baskets of fish and cackling poultry. Others bore large bundles of wood tied together on their backs. The reindeer transformed into a hummingbird and watched the scenes from above. It was tiny enough to escape scrutiny. Flying into the open window in the temple, it followed more steps on its pre-adorned path. On an exquisitely carved jade and gold pedestal, a matriarchal container, a monk with webbed fingers and toes opened the ruby and emerald-encrusted top. On
an almost blinding light exploded. It contained three hairs from Buddha. The hummingbird changed into a perfect six-sided snowflake. It floated down gently and landed, glistening on the hairs of Buddha, and melted. And that was that.
What questions from anyone?
Huh?
About catfish.
Sounds like a rite of passage.
Yeah.
Catfish, what conditions help you? What conditions help you with the writing process? Where do you
lots
need to be?
LSD
what
in my hippie days?
Oh, in your hippie days. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Lots of LSD flashbacks. Peyote, marijuana, alcohol. No, none of that. It's just a story that I worked on a long time. You know that I. You know, it's been nominated for prizes and stuff. It hasn't won Push Cart and Best of the Net and stuff like that. But, yeah, I like it a lot. It's one of my favorites. But it, to me, it was like a reverse immigration of Chang Ming coming from China. This guy was going from the States back over that way, you know. But then, you know, he disappeared. It's one of those poems that it's better read than being read to, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll be right back with a quick break. And Wing Dog, Tony, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah.
All right. Do you plan to read again?
No, it was just that one.
Okay. But you're going to stay with us and listen. Hopefully so. All right?
Yes.
And Yvonne, I want to be back with you to talk about the festival that's coming up. Am I correct?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And we'll be right back after a very short break. You know, our breaks are only 30 seconds, only give you time to kind of breathe. But we'll be right back. Like I said, they only give you time for one quick breath, and we're back on the air. Wing Dog,
yes.
My friend from Alabama, would you grace us with one of your powerful pieces?
Yeah, sure, I will. This piece is called Lyrical Masquerade, Falling. Have you ever read this here?
Yeah, what?
Have I ever read this piece here?
No.
I don't think so, my friend. No.
All I heard was pain, man.
Remember, everything is new to everybody else, Wing Dog, so I know your talent, so please.
Oh, okay, this piece is called Lyrical Masquerade, Bawling, with the emphasis on the bawling. and it's a tidbit, just a tid long than what I like it to be, but I couldn't stop writing. Anyway. Fox sponsored a rocket to the moon so I could dance with the stars, or at least charter a plane to Hollywood. Leaving Seattle in a supersonic jet, we blazed a trail past Portland. Now I'm a trailblazer. With the mirror ball spinning, strobe lights, colorful beads, decorative masks, testing, mic check on board, the stage is set for a lyrical masquerade, a poetic Mardi Gras, a nationwide coast-to-coast party parade. Starting Friday, Saturday, filled with the Holy Ghost on Sunday, munching on lyrical treats on Monday, be so fat Tuesday I'll be burnt out by Ash Wednesday. And when I touch down, call me Biggie Luther, because this bad boy's having a party, so roll out the tables and chairs. Unlock your mind, Harry Houdini, as the freaks come out tonight. We can roam Bell Street like a Memphis Grizzly, balling, break bread, five loaves at a fish fry in Graceland. Headed to Nashville, had to kick the balls of a Tennessee Titan at the Hard Rock Cafe on the riverfront, front like he for real. Come on, Lucille, let's have a ball. We walked over to B.B. King's spot, and he thrilled Lucille till the thrill was gone. leaving her all alone. Blue lights on down in the House of Blues in New Orleans, where the streets reeked of bourbon. It cost more than a French Quarter to party with a sexy saint, Miss London. And this Lauren ain't from England either. Now hold up, Lil Wayne. Red Bull may give you wings, but I ain't no bird man. I need some more energy, more adjectives, more verbs, and then more actions. Lights, cameras, gotta take more selfies. Popping bottles of champagne with this chick named Evelyn, you would think I'm a king. We rocket past Houston on the Dallas to party with some cowboys. Stepping in boots with silver San Antonio Spurs. We stepped on the Riverwalk, dancing, moonwalking, doing the Cupid Shuffle with a line of pretty cowgirls and some Dallas Mavericks and some Texas hustlers. Chilling with Blake, we got clipped in L.A. for a few Jacksons at Phil and Magic throwback jersey jam, one worthy of James attending. But we didn't stay long when I saw actors acting like actresses walking out of a large walk-in closet. They were smiling all giddy and gay coming out the closet. But I dropped it like it's hot in Cali with Snoop and Ice Cube. Well, gangsters don't dance, they boogie, oogie, oogie. Uh-oh, I want something sweet. Give me a taste of honey. Three sweet things named Shaka, Mary, Jane, super freaks. And we partied like a rock star. We partied up with Prince. Feeling good and bluntly speaking of Mary Jane, I jetted down to Miami's heat to let Gabriel and Dwayne join this union and enjoy some Orlando's magic. This party is chronic. Drake, puff, puff, pass. Passed out. Woke up at 112 in the ATL to watch some real wannabe celebrity housewives with booty shining like silver dollars dangling on a pole. I mean some butt-naked dimes. Luda and T.I. made it rain, but Ursh and I certainly didn't mind. Go get that money, money, money. Rocking fresh Jordan and jumping with Jordan, I jumped to North Carolina, hung out with some cool Black Panthers. Partying with Cam in a new town, I got stung by a fine horny Charlotte Hornet. Man, I was in T-Pain, tremendously, almost sprung, until I picked up a pretty filly in Philadelphia. Spread Eagle, she let me hit it from the back like a quarterback, and I ran through her erotic zone with my devilish tongue. And when she came, I said, the devil made you do it. Now, careful, let's not turn this part into an orgy. I bounced to New York, New York, big city of dreams. Now, I took a bite out of the Big Apple while Jay changed clothes. On Broadway, this masked phantom skipped the opera and had a monster ball when I met up with Holly and Diddy. We had a layover on the way to Vegas with Floyd and Redis and Jordan, Sonny Mayweather. We partied till we had a hangover three times worse than hangover 1, 2, and 3. Chris and Omarion said that that's how the party's supposed to be. We flew between the Golden Arches and St. Louis. Nelly showed me Missouri. He hooked me up with a cute cutie pie, a bad Kansas City baby back rib. Such an tender, sweet and juicy and spicy she had in a nice amber rack. We grilled out till we were both outdone, and then we hit the sack. In Colorado, I was blinging like gold Denver Nuggets. Uh-oh, snap, okay. I hear thunder. Kevin, let's roll. It sounds like a herd of Denver Broncos coming. In Chi-Town, R. Kelly had a stepper in the name of love. And down in the Motown at an old school party in Detroit, pistol was popping off in the Motor Town. In Cleveland at LeBron's joint, we smashed out like an outdated Brown Cavalier because Keisha Cole treated us cold in Ohio. And finally, I betted on the Indianapolis Colts in Louisville at the Kentucky Derby. Exhausted from hanging like a whipping willow planted by a Westbrook, chilling out in the hot Phoenix sun, I'm about to throw shade. But sorry, it's Wednesday, and this is the end of this lyrical masquerade. Party, y'all.
All right.
Hey, dog. I don't know what to say. Man.
I do. Excellent.
What do you want to say? Excellent.
I say.
And I can hear Monk going on in the backdrop with that.
We say you hear Thelonious Monk?
Yeah, that's who I'm talking about.
Yeah, Thelonious Monk.
And that just won the award, man. Thelonious Monk.
Yes. Yes. Right. Talk about that piece, Wing Dog, because you took us around the country. Tell us about it. Why did you write that?
I wrote that because two Sundays ago, the 19th of this month, they had a open mic event called Lyrical Carnival Masquerade, and you had to dress up, wear the mask and everything. And I wrote that piece to perform at that event. But unfortunately, I didn't go. So after I wrote it, I was like, oh, well, I just put it in my file, and so I decided to share it tonight.
Oh, hey. Well, I'm glad you did. That was very powerful. Very powerful, sir. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Well, thank you.
Right. Thank all right. You. Yvonne,
I enjoy
you're back
playing
on.
With words.
Yeah,
all right.
You do. You enjoy playing with words. You really do. I mean, to me, as I've listened to you over the course of the months, it's just like, I don't know, it's kind of like a child playing in a sense, because the way that you're able to jump between different things, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, there's a level of excitement about your writing. So I'm always glad when you join us online. All right.
Thank you.
Yvonne, back to you. Back to you, sir.
All right. Well, basically what's going on now is my partner Colin Haskins and I are spearheading the National Beat Poetry Festival in Connecticut. And the punch of it is we're recruiting hosts, poet hosts in each of the United States to read and have poets of their own and set up venues from the last week of August this year through the whole month of September. And as it stands, we have 23 states confirmed, and yep, we did go international. We've got 6 countries on it too. So we're still on the recruitment level. Our website is still under construction. However, the mission statement and what we're about is happening there, and content's going to be coming up very quickly. A lot of confirmed folk. Website's www.nationalbeatpoetryfestival.org. And, you know, the gentleman who just read, man, I'd recruit him for his state because I could feel his spirit. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Definitely. I mean, you know, I'm working on the South right now, actually. I'm working on getting Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina, and some others in Kansas, too. But, yeah, it's really fun. The whole premise of this idea is that we're trying to create the largest celebration of the beat generation and its extents. That's even including, you know, the Bukowski end, the outlaw poetry, that kind of thing that was happening in the later day in the 60s and the 70s. And so it's actually going to be the largest historical event where almost Guinness, like there's that Guinness thing where they have everybody toast at the same time. It's kind of on that tip, except, you know, it's poetry. And each of the hosts puts something together where they have 6 to 7 poets, open mic, a little bit of music, and 2.5-hour run, you know, and they choose a date and they set to it and put it together. And this is just amazing to collaborate with this many people at this level, and I'm humbled by it. But we're still on the look, and you know we're on Facebook right now. It's National Beat Poetry Festival bulletin board. That's the gateway in for people who are looking and checking things out on the social media end of things, you know, or they receive surprising invitations from me. Like, you know, I checked out Catfish. I was looking at him and. I mean, he's still not off the hook yet, no pun intended. Catfish would actually be somebody I'd have as a featured poet. He'd be that to me.
Oh yeah, Catfish.
You know, he's got a lot of history behind this. The topic itself, he has a lot of tied history himself with it. You know, the beat culture and so on. But it's a legacy, I think, too, where if you don't. Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Hello? Okay,
yeah.
I heard a strange modem sound.
No,
anyway, the thing is, if you look at the legacy, there's so many parts of the beat culture that haven't been represented, like, say, Venice Beach poets, some of the fringe, the street type poetry, say, some of the stuff that Catfish has written. He's been writing for years and years. And, yeah, it's been seen and everything, but I think that you have to keep reminding people culturally of, you know, where things have gone and where they're going. It's kind of a yesterday meets today. If you don't know where you're coming from, how can you know where you're going? And that's part of our role, too, I think, to have this festival. To really keep people connected with poetry and, you know, to not lose a history just because there's Wikipedia or some short, you know, paraphrase of something, but get more in depth with each other.
Well, if there's any way that we here in Washington, D.C. can help you promote it, just let me know and we'll go from there because it sounds
excellent.
Like a great
Thank
opportunity.
You. Great opportunity. Not to be an audio hog, but I have a. He gave a call. Your last, poet. He gave a call, and I have a quick response based on the New Orleans vibe. It's a really short piece, if that's okay.
Okay, great. Please share. Yes.
It's called French Quarter Breakdown. Creole teens tapping with crushed soda cans beneath their feet, slapping and clapping to their own beat. Silver paint robotic mimes standing still on milk crates. Give donations, please. White angel with blue eyes, what a thrill. Elvis with pointy pompadour, glittery jumpsuit and banana seat sitting still. Giant shades, a faint disguise. Leave all your worries behind. Listen if you want to the Big Five Bounce. Big cop, fish swallow, zebra-legged criminal. Carriage mules trot by. Clip, clop, clip, clop. That's it.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I was in New Orleans, man. Everything's happening all at the same time. That's the amazing experience of that place. No matter where you're at, it's all happening at the same time.
Well, the same lyricism and melodic spirit that was in your piece was the same that I heard in Wing Dog's piece and that I hear in Catfish's piece. I mean, that I've heard in Tony's piece. I mean, it's just a very powerful thing. I mean, just that rhythm, that sound that poetry brings, I mean, it's just incredible. We've got another person who's signed on. I'm going to call him in and see whether he'd like to share. All right. Area code 858. Are you there?
Hello. Yeah, this is Kofi. I'm just tuning in. I'm in transit, so I'm just listening in.
Kofi, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great, thank you, sir. And how are you?
All right.
Thanks for the presentation again. Another great night. Thank you.
Yeah, great. We're glad you're here. He's one of our faithful callers. That's Kofi. What I'd like to do is share a piece, and it's kind of a different kind of piece for me. I don't ordinarily write in this style. I don't know if you call it a style. But Catfish used the name Gene, and I've got this same name in this piece, and it's dedicated to Gene Moreau. I watched a film recently called Jules and Jim, and she was the main character, Catherine, and it's in, took place in France, of course, and everybody knows that I know that I've always wanted to visit France, so it's called The Exit. I dream of my plan to see Jean. She in the passenger seat, we high above the dazzling cerulean waters of the Côte d'Azur, carefree in our love. Breathless from laughing. He who hesitates is not only lost, but miles from the next exit. Anonymous. I hear a loud and unexpected knock on the door. Hard times had decided to pay me a visit and resolved not to leave. I struggle to understand. Yet hard times never reveal the beginning or the end. He who hesitates is not only lost, but miles from the next exit. Anonymous. So I cursed in the daylight, sadly moaned in the moonlight, Beckett peacefully slept while I patiently waited for Godot. I birthed weariness and dismay, rebuffed by a non-existent character in a play. He who hesitates is not only lost, but miles from the next exit. Anonymous. Perhaps the past will repeat itself. I gallantly fought hard times before, tenderly held my own bloody defeat. Victory unattainable in a cruel and one-sided war, yet I joyously cried to the strains of Lily Marlene heard off in the distance. Hard times had moved on and knocked on a new door. He who hesitates is not only lost, but miles from the next exit. Anonymous. I dream of my plan to see Jean, she in the passenger seat, we high above the dazzling cerulean waters of the Côte d'Azur, carefree in our love. Breathless from laughing, we turn left onto the Rue du Temple.
All right.
The end.
Got to end with a knock. Well, everybody knows.
Man, I like
I got it.
That was a little
good one, man. I like
that
new one. Knock, knock.
Hey, trying. All right, as we continue.
You got a good vibe going there. I got to say something about Wing Dog, man. I'm writing him a poem, man. It's called Dynamite, Chainsaws, Wood Chippers, and the Women. James Brown with venereal disease. No, I don't know.
We covering the game tonight.
Wing Dog.
Want to get into some gut dog
and the Crimson Tide.
No. Yeah. Oh yeah, that's another piece of my. I'm gonna do a college piece with the SEC. Oh, that's a good idea. Oh. Thank you, Catfish.
Yeah, there you go, man.
War Eagle.
Yvonne, were you gonna make a statement? I thought I heard you in the background.
Oh, I was getting inspired. I was hearing gut bucket possibilities when I heard what you were saying, man. I was laughing.
How so?
Oh, man, you were talking about the disease, this, that, whatever, and I was, like, laughing because you were joking, man. It was pretty cool.
All right. All right, Tony, are you still there? Tony,
yeah,
are you there?
I'm still here. Yeah.
Any comments based on what you've heard so far? I mean, this is your first time on a blog talk show, I'm guessing, and the first time you've shared a piece of your work, which was excellent. Any comments about what you've heard about poetry tonight? What have you observed as you can share with Dr. Silk when you go back to class?
Yeah, I'm amazed at the creativity and the amount of diversity in style, in originality, and the pace, and also just the approaches. It's fascinating. I feel very motivated to go out there and just write some more.
All right, hey, I like hearing that. Poetry is truly a sense, a way to self-express and to put your thoughts in a manner that potentially you could never put them in. You know, we build our imaginations through the power of poetry. So I think I'm glad you're here with us. I really am. Okay, Wing Dog. Catfish. We got a Wing Dog and a Catfish. Catfish, you're back on, man. Please share some of your work.
I got one here.
All right.
I picked this one out after Wing Dong got away with one. It's called The Ghost of Libby. Dreaming of Libby Casper from the ninth grade. She was red-haired with creamy skin and freckles. Libby must have watched a Gypsy Rose Lee movie. She knew how to bump and grind to the music. Her parents had a monstrous aquarium full of goldfish. After we had a hot makeout session, Libby told me she'd do a striptease and remove an item of clothing every time I swallowed a goldfish. I used a tiny net, and they weren't bad to swallow being all slick. They went right down. A few started squirming in my mouth, and I spit them out, and this got Libby excited. Her pancake-sized boobs were topped with nice strawberries. When she got down to her panties, I thought her game was over. But she said if I ate a big goldfish and chewed it all up, she'd go all the way. Too bad her parents showed up just as I was puking remnants of fish all over their clean shag carpet. I lit out of there like Quicksilver on roller skates being shot at by a bazooka. And that's it.
All right. I won't ask you your inspiration behind that one. I think that one is self-explanatory. Anybody, any comments? That was a good one.
And the only thing I got is a body response to that call, man, but not from a personal experience of having gotten some and being chased out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man.
All right.
I got a piece for you, Catfish, if there's room for it. It's really short, man.
Okay, well, hey, please share it.
It's called Her Hidden Talent. She once read her words at local coffee houses. Gems erupted, restrained, yet her talent bore brushstrokes on absent canvases. Later, pictures on exhibit for sale. Her words once spoken, now sung, drawn on in B-movie song. A theft of their former meaning. The only art she now had was a drip of sweat on her neck, and the gap of negative space ripened as she leaned over to sign an autograph. There were no panties, and a floral print acted as tortured irony to the moist flower it masked. As I could taste sunlight gleaming honey from her diorama darkness, the plain skirt in its stillness held frame, while the subdued slip shifted mystery enough to see the dark, fluffy shadow of edible art between her thighs.
Uh-oh.
That's it.
That's
yeah.
Edible art?
Yeah,
that's
man.
Wow. Well, on that note, we're going to take a little longer break. All right. We'll be right back with the Power of Poetics. Hold on. All right. Incredible evening so far. I mean, I'm really pleased that the poetry and the spirit, the camaraderie, I mean, this has been really nice. Wing Dog, would you like to grace us again?
Yeah, how much time we got? I don't got time to do no long piece ever.
We got about 17 minutes left.
No, I won't do a long piece. I'm gonna wrap this. Do this piece is called "I Want My Poetry," and I submitted it, and it's been published in an anthology with Inner Child, and it's in a book called I Want My Poetry.
Right.
And I'm going to read, it's called I Want My Poetry. I want my poetry to liberate, educate, and be heard. I want my poetry to smile, laugh, cry, uplift, entertain, and rock this world. I want my poetry to bless all men, women, boys, and girls. From coast to coast, I want my poetry to be like crack or meth, very addictive, become a habit, a literary drug, potent lethal spit, transforming mind, an intellectual joint that everybody wants to hit. And when I step to the mic, I want my poetry to sing, rhyme, and talk much shit. Imagine my poetry, a penis, and your thought process a click. And as my word penetrate deeper, multiple orgasms your mind is sure to get. See, I want my poetry to be powerful enough to erase prejudice, cease hatred, expose terrors, and evil leaders like Connie. I want my poetry to rescue all invisible children held in any type of bondage, set them free. I want my poetry to teach, preach, and pray, shine light on darkness and illuminate a better divine way. I want my poetry to bring joy and give hope and to make peace. I want my poetry to stop all wars and make all injustices cease. Wait, why am I asking too much of my poetry? Am I in touch with reality? Real talk. Poetry can only do so much more. But on every heart, I want my poetry to touch. I want my poetry to be published in iconic as Soul Train, riding tracks from soul to soul. I want my poetry to be a vintage classic like Purple Rain. See, I can go on and on and on and on about what I want my poetry to do. But more importantly, I want my poetry to spit the truth. And really, though, most of all, I want my poetry to be inspired from El Shaddai, God Almighty, that sit high above. I want my poetry to be love and spread love. I want my poetry to be a revolution and a movement. I want my poetry to stand and fight, but more importantly, I want my poetry to live, breathe, and I want my poetry to be like Christ.
Wow. All right. Good one, man.
Wow.
Long live words.
Long live words. Yep. Wow.
That's a holy piece.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was
that's
a good
very
one.
Lovely.
I want my poetry to be like life. Poetry to breathe, to live. Wow.
And to be
what
like
I'm
Christ.
Do is, wow. I'm going to share something. I'm putting together a book, and it's called When Cherry Blossoms Fall on Black Skin. And I've been working on this book now for the last 8 years. But I view these as being musings from a misunderstood life. And it's just a series of them. So just listen. All right, the first one is called Love Does Funny Little Things Before Dying. Love does funny little things before dying. It digs its own grave and buries all remnants of its broken and forgotten heart. Yes, love does funny little things before dying. I was in love once. Once was enough. I don't like funerals. The next one. Hold your applause. Hold your applause. The next one. Hate is such a fluid word. It rolls off the tongue like honey, yet lands on the ground like a rock, shattering into many little fragments that need to be re-glued, remolded, or rejoiced. Next one. You should never put sugar on an onion, because no matter how sweet it looks on the outside, the lye still will not melt on your tongue, and your breath will still stink. Here's the next one. Come on, people. Work with me. Here we go. I'm too damn pissed to cry. Black tears will only stain my skin, and I don't have another white shirt to wear.
Wow.
Night has come again. Jazzy and vibrant is love. Gone is your excuse. The next one. A woman who lives without hope can only curse starry nights. She watched hope walk away under a moonlit sky. She needs time to grieve in the shadows. And finally, Lord Jesus, please come and highway me on home. Get in the fast lane, because I can't take it no more. All right. Those
all right.
are musings from a misunderstood life.
Those are almost like haiku.
It sounds like people talk about haiku, but I've got a riff on that. No poem on this end, but just the characterization. It sounds to me like blues haiku, man. That's how I would characterize it. It's not literally the form of haiku, man, but it's those liner notes, man. You got some statements in there. There's a punch in the end, and they're real. It's like, man, I'm thinking about Boogie Woogie, Ain't You Heard of a Dream Deferred, man. That kind of stuff, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like him, like Langston Hughes. There's a vibe with
like
that. You got some really strong statements.
Right, I appreciate that. Okay, I mean, we've got about Tony, are you sure you don't have another piece that you'd like to share?
Not right now. I didn't have anything ready.
I got
okay.
one if you
what?
Want.
You got one? All right, Wing Dog, you're back on.
Oh, yeah. Okay, this one's called Hippopotamus Summer. It was nominated for a Pushcart in nonfiction. It's a nonfiction. It's a real short story. It was in Blue Hour. She'd lived 4 summers and loved Snake Alley noodles, Delaware punch, strawberry ice cream, and wildflowers that grew along the railroad tracks, which divided the old celery fields of West Milwaukee. Different kinds of flowers grew each summer, purple coneflowers, ox-eye sunflowers, blue lobelia, Jacob's ladder, and black-eyed Susans. Their seeds mostly planted by birds and animals. The last 2 summers, wild, crazy red, yellow, and orange sunflowers conquered the hippopotamus-colored steel tracks. Their green stalks and roots wore snake down through the black goo creosote-coated railroad tracks. The tracks took me back 40 years to an all-night walk across the vast Fort Worth, Texas. to catch a westbound freight train for home in New Mexico. Stumbling over ankle-spraining rocks and gravel and jumping into prickly pear and yucca to avoid getting creamed by an Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Express. My young daughter wanted to get a few flowers for her mom. We stopped at the store for a few items, and I pulled around back to the loading dock where there was a jungle of flowers. I thought this was a 30-second job and opened my pocket knife and asked her to remain in the cool car. I got out and was almost done when I felt the tug of a small hand on my shirt. There was my daughter with a big smile that pulled and stretched my heart halfway to Tucumcari. The car was running with the keys locked inside. I noticed a semi-truck with another behind it waiting to use the dock. I grabbed my daughter's little hand and told the truck drivers I need to call my lady for an extra set of keys. They were not happy. 15 minutes later, Mom came to the rescue, and we got out of the predicament. That was 20 years ago. I've seen Van Gogh's sunflowers in ours since, but none compare to the beautiful memories of my ladies and the hippopotamus summer.
Wow. The hippopotamus summer. Power of words. Let me ask this question to everybody. You know, the goal of tonight's show was primarily to bridge cultures. Were we able to do that? Let's talk about that. Were we able to bridge cultures? Because we've got someone on the line from Connecticut, Alabama. We've had people reciting in Mandarin. I mean, personally, I feel that we're able to bridge cultures, and that's what poetry is all about from a world perspective. Anybody else? What are some of your thoughts?
And Swahili. Yeah.
How could I forget that one?
That was Tony.
Yes, right. Tony is the man. So bridging cultures, why is that in terms of poetry? Or is it important? We've got about 5 or 6 minutes left.
Well, I got a short piece that may explain that, but I think the goal was accomplished.
How so?
Because, like you say, I was listening early on before I called in, and I didn't understand some of the earlier pieces because I didn't understand the language, but I understood poetry. I if that makes sense, I understood where they was coming from. But you know, and because to me, poetry transcends all languages, all cultures. It's just like music to me.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's true. Anybody else? Your thoughts?
I agree with Wing Dog. I think Wing Dog has timing, and that's something that I don't have. And he's funky too, man. I mean, I've been doing this for about 25 years, and I've had Jack Michelin, who was probably one of the top street poets. I did a book with him and Bukowski, but Jack Michelin said, "Man, you don't have timing." That's one. And I've tried to get timing. I've had other people tell me my timing's off. Man, Wing Dog's got the timing, man, and he's got it, you know. And his stuff is powerful. It reminds me kind of a Baptist preacher. I know he's from the South. I'm from the Southwest, so, you know, I can relate. He's got timing. Now, Yvonne's a little different. He's up in Connecticut. He's got the New England slant. You, Michael, you're from North Carolina, but you're in Washington, D.C., and you've got plus, you're way more educated than any of us, except for Dr. Chang Ming. I mean, school educated. There's school education,
yeah, but
then there's street education, you know. It doesn't matter, man. Hey, I respect it. Anybody that's got a PhD, are you kidding me, man? If I could make people call me doctor, you call me Dr. Catfish, damn it. But I do respect your education.
Yeah, well, education
and
has
you
nothing
don't
to
use
do with
it against
education.
Any of us or anything.
No. I mean, no one should. I mean, hey, education.
You're talking about
not everything.
And you're talking about doing Shakespeare in the Round. Man, I don't know anything about Shakespeare.
Well,
never really cared. You ask me about Cervantes, and I'll tell you about him, you know, but I can't tell you about Shakespeare. But
I can't tell you anything about Frida Kahlo, you know, because you can tell me about her. So, I mean, again, education has nothing to do with it. To me, it's more about just being able to speak your truth, whatever that is, and also being able to learn from other people. You know, so in terms of having a quote doctoral degree, don't believe the hype, because to me, you're human first, and you have the same frailties, the same situations that anybody else have. That doctor doesn't mean anything if you don't have any money to go along with it. You know, so I mean,
I don't think about
don't
the money, man.
Don't believe the hype.
I mean,
don't
I got an honorable discharge, but from 3 years in the Army. That's the only thing
don't
I got to help me through life. But you know what?
Yeah.
I really admire anybody that'll stick to school all that many years to get a PhD, you know. And Dr. Chang Ming tonight, you know, he came all the way from China, couldn't even speak the language, went to Canada, and got his PhD up there, you know. I mean, you got to admire people that stick with it and go to school like that, man.
Yeah, I agree with Catfish. Michael, you know, you shouldn't downplay, like you tell me not to downplay my poetry. It is what it is. If it's good, and you know, I mean, you know, and so the same way for you, you know, you shouldn't downplay your education. That's a great accomplishment. I see the humility you in it, and you're modest with it, and that's good, and you don't try to throw it up and make us feel inferior, but you still shouldn't downplay it, because that's a great accomplishment. So I agree with Catfish. You know, you like you tell me all the time, embrace what God has given you. Embrace my poetry. Embrace your education, man. Everybody can't say they're a doctor or have a doctorate.
Well, I'll say thank you, because it did take a lot of work. We've got about 4 minutes. Anybody else want to share anything? Because I was going to
close with
one. Yes.
This piece is very short. It's called Poetry.
Okay.
Between my palms lies a vast land, full of deep imagery, exquisite scenery, intricate, intriguing, complex, yet so simple that even innocent and ignorant can understand. Visual perception derives in imagination, realities that appear so far, yet are so near. A knowledge spoken in many native tongues, while its dialect is crystal clear. The mute can speak it, the deaf can hear it, the blind can see it. Her verse and prose, profound and spiritual, touches even the most shallowest soul. The breath of Jehovah, sacred winds in motion, flowing through the lines in the palm of my hand. My fingertips caress poetry.
Oh, wow. You know, you know who else's fingertips caress poetry? Langston Hughes. And I want to give this piece to you, Yvonne, because you talked about a dream deferred. How does that sound?
Our host reminds me of Langston Hughes when he was reading from his manuscript. That's what I was mentioning it for, because he had really sharp points, but they're lyrical, and, you know, there's a root of blues in them.
All right, well, here we go. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat, or crust and sugar over like something that's syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load, or does it explode? Well, I want to thank all of you tonight. We've got about 10 seconds left, but I want to thank all of our guests who are here with us on the Power of Poetics. We build cultures tonight. So everybody, good night, and have a good evening.
Okay,
care,
thanks,
everybody.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Good evening yourself.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah,
edible art between our legs.